I turned back. "Show me one hand," I said again. The woman didn't answer. She was staring at my waist. With my hands high, my T-shirt had ridden up, and the scar low on my stomach was visible above the waistband of my pants. Raised, white skin, hard and lumpy. Big, crude stitches. Like a cartoon. Shrapnel from a truck bomb in Beirut, a long time ago. I had been 100 yards from the explosion. I was 98 yards closer to the woman on the bench. She stared on. Most people ask how I had gotten the scar. I didn't want her to. I didn't want to talk about bombs. Not with her. I said, "Show me one hand." She asked, "Why?" "You don't need two in there."
"Then what good can it do you?"
"I don't know," I said. I had no real idea what I was doing. I'm not a hostage negotiator. I was just talking for the sake of it, which is uncharacteristic. Mostly I'm a very silent person. It would be statistically very unlikely for me to die halfway through a sentence. Maybe that's why I was talking. The woman moved her hands. I saw her take a solo grip inside her bag with her right, and she brought her left out slowly. Small, pale, faintly ridged with veins and tendons, middle-aged skin, plain nails trimmed short, no rings, not married, not engaged to be. She turned her hand over to show me the other side, empty palm, red because she was hot. "Thank you," I said. She laid her hand palm down on the seat next to her and left it there, like it was nothing to do with the rest of her, which it wasn't at that point. The train stopped in the darkness. I lowered my hands. The hem of my shirt fell back into place. I said, "Now show me what's in the bag."
"Why?"
"I just want to see it, whatever it is." She didn't reply. She didn't move. I said, "I won't try to take it away from you. I promise. I just want to see it. I'm sure you can understand that." The train moved on again. Slow acceleration, no jerk. Low speed. A gentle cruise into the station, a slow roll. Maybe 200 yards, I thought. I said, "I think I'm entitled to at least see it. Wouldn't you agree?" She made a face like she didn't understand. She said,
"I don't see why you're entitled to see it."
"You don't?"
"No."
"Because I'm involved here. And maybe I can check it's fixed right for later. Because you need to do this later, not now."
"You said you were a cop."
"We can work this out," I said. "I can help you." I glanced over my shoulder. The train was creeping along, white light up ahead. I turned back. The woman's right hand was moving. She was juggling it into a firmer grip and slowly shaking it free of the bag, all at once. I watched. The bag snagged on her wrist, and she used her left hand to free it up. Her right hand came out. Not a battery. No wires. No switch. No button, no plunger, something else, entirely. Chapter 5. The woman had a gun in her hand. She was pointing it straight at me. Low down, dead center, on a line between my groin and my navel. All kinds of necessary stuff in that region. Organs, spine, intestines, various arteries and veins. The gun was a Ruger Speed 6. A big old .357 Magnum revolver with a short 4-inch barrel, capable of blowing a hole in me big enough to see daylight through. But overall, I was a lot more cheerful than I had been a second before. Many reasons. Bombs kill people all at once. Guns kill one at a time. Bombs don't need aiming. and guns do. The Speed 6 weighs north of 2 pounds, fully loaded. A lot of mass for a slender wrist to control. And Magnum rounds produce searing muzzle flash and punishing recoil. If she had used the gun before, she would know that. She would have what shooters call Magnum flinch. A split second before pulling the trigger, her arm would clench and her eyes would close and her head would turn away. She had a decent chance of missing, even from 6 feet. Most handguns miss. Maybe not on the range, with ear defenders and eye protection and time and calm and nothing at stake. But in the real world, with panic and stress and the shakes and a thumping heart, handguns are all about luck, good or bad, mine or hers. If she missed, she wouldn't get a second shot. I said, "Take it easy," just to be making sounds. Her finger was bone white on the trigger, but she hadn't moved it yet. The Speed 6 is a double-action revolver, which means that the first half of the trigger's pull moves the hammer back and rotates the cylinder. The second half drops the hammer and fires the gun. Complex mechanics, which take time. Not much, but some. I stared at her finger, sensed the guy with the ballplayer's eyes, watching. I guessed my back was blocking the view from farther up the car. I said, "You've got no beef with me, lady. You don't even know me. Put the gun down and talk." She didn't reply. Maybe something passed across her face, but I wasn't watching her face. I was watching her finger. It was the only part of her that interested me. And I was concentrating on the vibrations coming up through the floor, waiting for the car to stop. My crazy fellow passenger had told me that the R-142As weigh 35 tons each. They can do 62 miles an hour. Therefore, their brakes are very powerful. Too powerful for finesse at low speeds. No feathering is possible. They clamp and jerk and grind. Trains often skid the last yard on locked wheels, hence the characteristic screech as they stop. I figured the same would apply even after our slow crawl. Maybe more so, relatively speaking. The gun was essentially a weight on the end of a pendulum. A long, thin arm? 2 pounds of steel. When the brakes bit down, momentum would carry the gun onward. Uptown. Newton's law of motion. I was ready to fight my own momentum and push off the bars the other way and jump downtown. If the gun jerked just 5 inches north, and I jerked just 5 inches south, I would be in the clear. Maybe 4 inches would do it.